You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Edition of All Marine Radio. Happy Easter to everybody. Hope you had a good one. Certainly different, eh? I threw that A in there for all my Canadian friends out there. Yeah, you like that? Culturally appropriate. I know you listen. I watch my stuff. Yeah, a little bit different. Can't go where you want, can't do what you want to do. The world that we live in. Breaking news. The sailor that was admitted to the intensive care unit in Guam from the Theodore Roosevelt has passed away. Now, that will not be the only member of the Department of Defense that will pass away due to the coronavirus, but there will be an investigation. And the investigation will start with why were crew members of the Roosevelt allowed to go on liberty in Vietnam in March? The rest of the world is dealing with this deadly virus. The world's been watching China deal with it. Vietnam right next door. And somebody said, yeah, well, Vietnam doesn't seem to have so many cases, so fuck it, let's go on libo. Yeah. So that's the first thing that'll get investigated. Who made that decision? And then the next one will be, evidently the one that's being concluded, is what happened? You have a former acting Secretary of the Navy calling a captain of a vessel. Now, for Marines, he's a captain. In spite of the fact that he's a captain of a ship, he's essentially a colonel. You know, the Secretary of the Navy talking directly to a colonel. Doesn't happen very often, I dare say. So, what happened in all that? Did this captain get flustered because all of a sudden he's got an outbreak of this stuff on his ship? And if it was his decision to go on liberty in Vietnam, then it's his fault? And he's not getting help quick enough and he's scared now? And he hits the panic button? And not only does he hit, and then he talks to the Secretary of the Navy, according to the Secretary of the Navy, told him that he was worried, but after speaking to people the last couple of days, he's good, and then boom, this letter appears in the San Francisco Chronicle. So what's the truth in all that? Did the people above the captain of the USS Theodore Roosevelt, did they drag their feet and not do what they were supposed to do? Or getting those sailors off the ship in Guam, in the numbers, two hotels, did that just take a few days? And he got frustrated with it and then went public on an unsecured net with his criticism. Now, to me, when I read all things are being considered to include the reinstatement, that's the Secretary of Defense, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the CNO of the Navy. They're just saying that. While Captain Crozier might be reinstated if he was insubordinate inside the chain of command on a secure network, he can never be reinstated for being insubordinate on an unsecured net and being insubordinate outside the chain of command. That makes sense? Like, I can save you if it's in-house and you say, that guy's an idiot, he's not doing his job, and I need help here. He doesn't get it. And I go, not to you, my boss, but your boss. Now, if your boss finds that, in fact, I'm right, and my immediate boss was wrong, then I got a chance to live. The fact that he went outside, unsecured, in public, means he can never get his job. So that's eyewash from the CNO. Okay? Because if you, in fact, restore him, what happens is you tell everybody out there, when you don't like what's going on, feel free to go to the public. Feel free to go to the media. Now, even the Navy wouldn't do that. Right? I'm not sure. We shall see. But, I mean, the message that it would send would be consistent with all the other shit messages that the Navy sends to its leaders. There's a story. I'm not ready to go here yet, but this is called a teaser. Yeah. There's a story today. Headline, report, investigators say fired USS Decatur captain lied about the ship's position. Like, what? He lied about the ship's position? And it reminded me of shit that would happen in Vietnam. I tell you, okay, McNamara, you're going to go out on an ambush patrol. Okay? You, Napa man, Ohio man, take Montana man with you, you know, put him out on flank security someplace, just take him with you. And so... your job is to go conduct an ambush, you know, on one of these trails here. You go figure it out. Got it. I say got it, but I don't want to do it. So what do? I'd go outside our lines. I'd go about 100 meters. I'd find a defensible position, and we'd all go to sleep. Yep. We'd radio in we're someplace else. I mean, but that's like young Marines that are insubordinate and are pissed at the world and are in Vietnam and they're not going to do what they're supposed to do. Not the commanding officer of a ship, for God's sakes. So here's the story from the San Diego Union Tribune. This is a little bit more than a tease. But the captain of the San Diego-based guided missile destroyer Decatur was removed from command in January for filing false position reports to the Navy, according to a Navy investigation. Come on. I kid you not. According to the investigation, Commander John Bob Bowen, the Decatur's commanding officer, ordered his crew in September not to report that the ship had gone dead in the water. Okay. Dead in the water. What? Like, are you kidding me? Honestly, man, one of the byproducts of Secretary Mattis leaving is the shit show that you're seeing inside the Department of Defense. And I'll get to a little bit more of that later. The ship had stopped to conduct maintenance on one of its propeller shafts while transiting the Eastern Pacific from Hawaii to Seal Beach. In order to hide the four-hour-long stop from the fleet, the crew reported inaccurate ship positions to make it appear as though the vessel had never stopped, the investigation said. To cover up that deception, the investigation said, staff in the ship's Combat Information Center disabled two electronic systems called Link 16 and Global Command and Control to prevent the ship's true position from being relayed automatically. Yeah, that's for all you people that said, we don't still report just verbally, do we? Instead, the ship falsely reported dead reckoning coordinates to the fleet that made it appear the ship had continued on its course. In his interview with investigators, Bowen said he could not recall ordering his crew to turn off the electronic trackers. But they all did. So could this Navy reinstate Captain Crozier? You bet your ass they could. Right? And Mark Esper, I mean, he's a B-team guy, right? Business guy, nothing extraordinary. He's standing there. And somebody assessed that, you know, and this is the way President Trump likes it, right? He'll do my bidding. He'll do what I tell him to do. These other guys who have their own ideas, no use for them. So anyway, that news. So there'll be an investigation. And it ought to cover why were they allowed to go ashore in Vietnam? I mean, over half the cases, I'd be curious. I haven't seen a number relative to the Roosevelt battle group and the total cases. But, I mean, the Roosevelt goes, when it goes, it has a couple destroyers, you know, a cruiser. You know, it's a monumental event when it all gets together. And they make a port visit. And so the Roosevelt by itself had over 50% of the Navy's cases. So anyway, that news just in the last 30 minutes from over the weekend. I read a lot over the weekend. I read a lot about a lot of the different issues surrounding the Commandant's new planning guidance. And the United States and the world is going to have an opportunity at the end of this, or on, I won't say the end, on the back side of this, to bring China to heel. Okay? Now, the reason that the world is undergoing the level of death and the level of economic destruction that is happening is because China lied. Everybody, we've all now seen, you know, how contagious this virus is. The Chinese saw it in November, December. The thing spreads like wildfire. And they knew in the first weeks of it that human-to-human transmission was possible. But they lied in December, they lied in January about it. And so now, had other nations known about it, they could have taken precautions, right? Especially nations that have a lot of Chinese workers, Italy, Iran, that are coming and going and doing work on projects in those nations. And the rest of the world could have taken other precautions. And maybe you wouldn't have the number of people that are dying. Now, so what does all this mean? China's on its charm offensive, right? Sending its poorly made, you know, mask. In fact, it's interesting. You're seeing more and more news that the quality of the stuff that we've received from China. The latest one was the stuff that came from China on the airplane that the New England Patriots owner sent, Bob Kraft, is not particularly up to snuff. And I was just trying to see if I can find that. And so what will the world do, right, with China? Now, the post-World War II world is a rules-based order, right? Things like the international law of the sea, right? It's we have organizations. We have organizations that arbitrate. So China doesn't. They don't play in any of those games. And I mean, you don't have to look further than their treatment of the nine-dash line. Every country has the right to It's what's called its economic exclusion zone, which extends 200 miles off its coast. Every country has that right. China draws a line, arbitrarily draws a line that's over, you know, almost 1,500 miles away from its nation and says, that's ours. That's ours. And so, in fact, you can, there's a pretty, I put a pretty good explanation of the nine dash line in the South China Sea that I saw over the weekend. I put that on the read board. So if you go to the website and you check out blog/readboard, you'll see the South China Sea explained, a video. Go ahead and watch that. Pretty good. Talked about exclusion zones, right? So I thought it was a pretty good little thing. So I put it up on the web board. So, but China seeks in a variety of areas, both politically and economically, to usurp the rules-based order that we've all lived under and going to bend it to their own will. And so the world's going to have an opportunity to impact that, to say, you know what? This happened because you think you don't have to play by the rules like everybody else. And I mean, imagine what the economic damage is going to be to the planet because of them. Imagine that. Everybody's feeling it. People working at home. You know, let me tell you, what is ever going to happen to the bar business again until we get a vaccine for this? I mean, how do you have a bar, you know, with social distancing? You have, you know, tables, you have high top tables with, you know, four chairs around it. So you can come with your friends and the next table's 10 feet away. And, you know, you can do that. All drinks are served. You cannot sit at the bar, or you have two chairs together, two chairs together, two chairs together. And if you come in there by yourself, you get one of those two chairs and nobody can sit in the one next to you. I mean, it will destroy the bar business for a long time. Yeah, how about that? Restaurant business, if you missed the chef on Friday, the chef was talking about, we were talking about, so what would you have to do if you had your restaurant still? He said, I'd have to take out tables. I'd have to take out tables. Everybody's got to be able to have enough distance, right? And we didn't even get to this, but you'd have to put in some kind of electronic ordering system. Right. Or your servers are going to have to stay 6 feet away as they take your order. And they're going to have to be masked. And that's until, you know, we get a vaccine for this. I mean, calculate the economic damage to that. I was watching the news over the weekend and they were talking about that. I can't remember how many states. I want to say like 25% of the states in the country have a hospital occupancy that's less than 2%. Yeah, everything is stopped in the hospitals. And they don't have COVID-19 patients, or they have very few. So if you're not working in that part of the hospital, you've been sent home. And now you're going to get laid off. Hello. So is China accountable for that or not? Right now, what they'll do is they'll lie about it. And the question is, what will the World Health Organization do? Will the World Health Organization stand up for the rest of the world? Or will we play the emperor's new clothes with the Chinese? So there's an opportunity there. Now, China defines itself as a developing nation, right? In the World Trade Organization. Yeah, the largest economy in the world defines itself like that. So I went looking around. What does that mean? All right. Let me read some basic stuff about this stuff. Special provisions in World Trade Organization agreements give developing countries more time to implement tariff reductions, increased asymmetrical access to foreign markets, protections that safeguard their trading interests, and technical support to help them implement WTO rules. The aim of these preferences is to help poorer countries to reduce poverty, generate employment, and integrate themselves into the global trading system. Is that China? I don't think so. How is a developing country designated? Any nation can declare itself to be a developing country upon joining the WTO. Almost two-thirds of the WTO's 164 members have done so. The WTO doesn't have an official policy or definition guiding what constitutes developing. Can a country's developing status expire or be revoked? No, but other members can challenge the decision of a member to make use of provisions available to developing countries. So that's China, right? And China does so as a way to protect itself, to give itself advantages. And then they play, if you call bullshit on it, they play the extortion game, right? With the Philippines, let's just say. Really? Do you want to do this in public? You know, with a stroke of the pen, not even a stroke of the pen, with a phone call, I will destroy you selling fish into China. Do you know what that's going to do to your country? It's going to cause massive unemployment. You won't be reelected. You will become the village idiot, and your nation is going to go into an economic recession. It just takes a phone call from me that I'm more than willing to do. So I don't care what the international law of the sea says. You need to back out of that shit. Do you understand? That's what China does. So the rules don't matter. And so to me, on the backside of the COVID-19 thing, if the free nations of the world, so who do I mean? I mean the free nations in Asia, the European Union, in conjunction with the United States, Canada, Mexico, and anybody else. If those nations will not look at China and say, you need to play by the rules like the rest of us. And that means transparency relative to public health. That means stop this extortion. And we all, I mean, there's an opportunity there. Now, let me tell you why that's important. Let me link it to the Commandant. You know, the Commandant's planning guidance to me, the more I read about it, the Marine Corps is over its skis. Okay, the way that should be implemented, first through a national policy articulated by the president, which means the Trans-Pacific Partnership has to be animated. There has to be life blown into it. Okay, and again, I would say in conjunction with the EU, the United States, Mexico, and Canada, right, we want to make a deal, right, with Pacific nations. ASEAN, and then throw in Vietnam, throw in Indonesia, throw in Malaysia, throw in those nations of the South China Sea. We want to make a deal with you. And our economies are three times the size of China. Okay? And we're not asking you to do an either-or thing. But here's what we want. We want closer relationships with you. And we want closer diplomatic relationships with you. We want closer economic relationships with you. And then guess what that opens the door to? Closer military relationships with you. Because as you look at this thing about American engagement in the Pacific, if it doesn't start with diplomatic and economic, it doesn't go anywhere. Because you are not going to fight your way into that part of the world if you're blocked out economically and diplomatically, no matter what anybody says. This whole thing sneaking around and all that bullshit, where are you going to do that? Now, maybe you can sit outside of it and you can bottle China up in the first island chain. I think that's more than feasible. So to me, the United States has an opportunity, and what it has an opportunity to do is double down and reinforce the rules-based system that the world has played by post-World War II. a system that essentially Britain and the United States, right, developed as FDR and Churchill went to Yalta with Uncle Joe Stalin. But Stalin wasn't so much interested in the international rules-based order. But that's what grew out of all of that. China seeks to usurp that. And if they can usurp that, then the United States not going to make huge inroads. So this whole thing about what we're doing in the Pacific, it goes nowhere. That dog doesn't hunt unless there's a permissive environment that allows us access to the dirt around the South China Sea. And it starts with diplomatic and economic relationships. Those relationships open up military training and then also military basing. And that's how this thing needs to go. Without that, in my opinion, these plans are, you know, somebody smoking crack, if you ask me. So anyway, deep thinking, right? Deep thinking. So we shall see. You see a lot of senators on TV talking about this. Question is, will they act? I mean, some good things, I think, that will come out of this. I think the UK might get over using a Chinese firm as part of their 5G infrastructure. I think that dog not going to hunt, which is a good thing. All right. And so so that's a good thing. And I think the world will, I think there's going to be countries that absolutely positively demand that China compensate them for the trillions of dollars that they will lose. And here's another thing that the United States is going to have to confront as I transition subject here. How long can we stay like this? How long can the government continue? Now the hospital industry wants relief. How long can we stay like this? At some point, the federal government has to look and say, we can't do anymore. We're at the limit of what we can do. So how do we go back to work? Who gets to go back to work? And again, that path has to be well-defined. That path has to be well-defined so people understand it. Okay, I get it. I get it. There's going to be some people that die because of this. But if you have these conditions, you can't go back to work. You have to work from home. And that's a problem. What happens if you have those conditions? You're a bartender. That's what you do. That's how you make your money. Right? Can you still be a bartender like that? Can you mask up and go be a bartender? Can you put the plexiglass up? You know, and that's how we do it now. So I think, you know, all those are pretty interesting questions. A couple other things for the weekend. I'll play this for you. For the first time ever, you know, my daughter Colleen, she's involved in debate, and we were out going for a hike a few months ago, and we're talking about, you know, she was, her side of the debate was the means don't justify the ends, and so consequently we got to talking about the atomic bomb, and so I said, well, Colleen, the truth is that it was a humane act, right? And so she looks at me like, what? Right? And I said, no. I said, you have to look at it in the context of what was about to happen. And if you look at that and you look at what the president was briefed on, all right, and the study's done by Secretary of War Henry Stimson's staff, estimated that invading Japan would cost 1.7 to 4 million American casualties, including somewhere between 400 and 800,000 killed in action. and 5 to 10 million Japanese fatalities if we had to fight the way we fought on Iwo Jima and Okinawa through Japan. Jaw-dropping, right? So you're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of, and again, 5 to 10 million Japanese fatalities, civilian and military, as we firebombed all their cities, as we laid waste to Japan. And somewhere between, let's just say, 500,000 American KIA. And so you listen, and so we're talking, and she looks at me, she goes, I didn't know that. I said, well, no, people don't. You know, I mean, that was the problem with Barack Obama's apology. And so when the subject of Barack Obama going to Japan, right, and he made a historic visit, and so there was a big question of would he apologize? And so, in my opinion, you know, which would have been entirely inappropriate. The United States didn't start that war. But anyway, and truth be told, you know, Barack Obama, he went there, right? And he didn't apologize. He expressed sympathy for the victims, absolutely appropriate. But the United States had nothing to apologize for. But I had never heard a Japanese person say that. So I want to play some audio for you. I was watching a thing about Iwo Jima on Saturday night, me, Jack, and Joe. And this is a soldier that was captured on Iwo Jima. And the first part you're going to hear is some Marines talking about Iwo Jima and the prospect of living through an invasion of mainland Japan. You know, and then you're going to hear an ensign, and his name is Koshi Endo, who survived the Battle of Iwo Jima. And he actually, and listen to what he says about the people who were killed at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I never heard a Japanese person say that.
You'd have to be real lucky to, if we landed on Japan, to survive. And I didn't have an optimistic view of that. I felt that I'd used all my luck up on Iwo Jima.
I figured it'd go on for years because of what we'd experienced at Iwo Jima, and no giving up, you know, they wouldn't give up. So we figured they'd fight right down to the last. And to land on the, you know, the Japanese islands or something there, we thought it would go be terrible. We didn't know about an atomic bomb, which is the real reason the war ended when it did.
On August 6th, 1945, the United States dropped an atomic bomb on the Japanese industrial city of Hiroshima. And again 3 days later on Nagasaki.
It is terrible to kill so many people with a single bomb. But at that time, Japan was prepared to continue fighting, even if all of the 100 million citizens were killed. Although I feel so sorry for the victims of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, I believe that it is due to the sacrifice that people of Japan were saved.
Before we begin,
you know that, I never heard a Japanese person say that. So I thought I would share that with you. Yeah. I mean, so it is, I mean, I think anybody who studies, you know, World War II comes to that conclusion that ultimately, you know, dropping bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki was a humane act. And people would recoil from that. It's the absolute, positively, straight-up truth. Straight-up truth. The other thing I did over the weekend was I decided, you know, you start on a project and say, oh, yeah, I need to do that. And I have gutters I have a patio, and then there's an awning over the patio, and there's gutters on the awning. And those things are filled with dirt. No, I've lived here since 2015. No, not that long. Yeah, maybe. Really? That long? Wow, it doesn't seem like that long. So anyway, I decide that I'm going to take those down. And unbelievable, filled with dirt. But you know when you tackle a project, all of a sudden it starts getting more complicated. And then I'm doing it by myself. So I'm going to take this long stretch of gutter down, and it's filled with dirt, and it's heavy, right, when you put the dirt in, and it's aluminum. How am I going to get this? And it might be 30 feet long. How am I going to get this down once I undo all the screws? Good question. Okay, so I have one balanced on one of the support beams. I have another part of it balanced on a 4x4, and then I have it down to this one screw. But once I take this screw out, it's coming down. So I figure, okay, I'm going to hold it with my arm. I'll unscrew the screw, and then I'll put that on the ladder, right, that I'm standing on. And then between the ladder, the 4x4, and the support post at the other end, I'll have 3 points. And then I really don't know what I'll do after that. Okay, but that's where I have it. It's like, okay, so some way I can control, bring it down once I do that. So I do that. And now I've got it on those 3 points. I'm like, all right, what do I do now? And I'm like, there's nothing I can do. And I've got nobody to help me. So I just kind of tipped it, and it fell against the fence, against these bushes. And my neighbor yells, "What the hell was that?" And he was former A4 pilot in Vietnam. I said, "Hey, shut up over there." He's like, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm cleaning the gutters." So, yeah, it was a big project for me yesterday. And so I got to finish it up today. So anyway, so happy Easter, everybody. Good morning. Chris Woodbridge of the Marine Corps Gazette is going to join us today. We'll talk to Woody. We'll talk to Woody about leadership, get his thoughts on hour two. One, the whole concept of public insubordination. In spite of what the Secretary of Navy did, can anything save the captain of the USS Theodore Roosevelt when you're publicly insubordinate? My answer is no. And this story today. And so here's what happened on that ship that, quote unquote, dead in the water. That's not, the United States Navy does not really look favorable on dead in the water. Okay. And that's why he lied about his ship. The reason he lied was because that ain't supposed to happen. Your ship's not supposed to go dead in the water. And the reason it's not supposed to go dead in the water is because you're in charge of the maintenance. When you go to sea, you're supposed to, you have redundant systems. They're maintained well. And all of a sudden you have this oh shit moment where like, oh my God, my engineer said, this has happened. Well, I know that's on me. And so, all right, how much time do you need? Okay, we'll all stop everything. We'll shut the satellites off. We'll report what we want to report. You know, can you get it done in an hour? And then it takes 4 hours. And now they're lying about their position. Question is, how many times have they done it in the past? Where did he learn that trick? I'm sure he didn't just dream it up that day. So we'll talk to Woody about that. We'll talk to him. The current issue of the Marine Corps Gazette is about information operations. We'll talk about that. And if you have any questions, give us a call. So on this Monday, the 13th day of April, good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. this dedicated to everybody over the weekend who has lost somebody. You know, you can't get together to hold a funeral and all the rest of the craziness that is part of our world today. So, you know, this is dedicated to all those people. And there's a lot of them around the country who have who've lost friends or lost a family member, cannot get together and mourn. You know, you're seeing stories about virtual memorial services and things like that. But it sucks. And the nation needs to get after explaining to everybody. Now, I'll draw a parallel with post-traumatic winning. I talked about Matt Kiker again, who, if you haven't listened to the interviews I've done with him, you should. K-I-K-E-R. If you just search on that, listen to his story. Matt had another member of his family die. And he and I were talking last week. And he said, but you know, Mac, he said, I understand it now. I understand the path that leads through the dark place and how to get to the light place. And you could hear the confidence in his voice that he knew how to do that. That although it would be painful, and that he knew what to do. He understands the path. And so to me, I think we're all kind of like waiting for the path. Like, what is the path? And so that to me is what the government has to lay out, is the path. So, and I don't think most of us understand it yet. So I think there needs to be published in short order so we can all kind of begin to gauge, okay, this test has to be online. This has to happen, right? And then once this test is online, if you already have the virus, then go ahead and you can go back to work. And we're going to have this ID on your phone. Everybody got to download it. So all that kind of stuff. If you haven't had it, right, and everybody's got a mask up, right, at work. If you haven't had it, then here's what you're going to have to do. You have to continue to social distance. You know, you wear your mask. You're going to have to be conscious of your temperature. And at the earliest onset of symptoms, you have a 99%, you know, chance of survival. Okay, so know that. And because now we have some blood plasma treatments, we have, you know, some other prophylactic treatments, and we kind of understand this thing a little bit better. If you're susceptible to it, you're going to have to continue to work from home. You're going to have to continue to work from home. So, I mean, people need to understand the path. And then the question is, well, what happens if I am a bartender and I want to work and my bar is going to open up? It's going to be table seating only, and it's going to be pairs at the bar itself, but there's going to be no like mass people grouped together, right? And we're going to have plexiglass up between the customers and the bartenders, and I'm going to push drinks underneath the plexiglass to our clients. Okay, I can do that, right? So the nation's got to do a better job of laying that out, and then people are going to begin to say, okay, I now understand how I'm going to have to live for the next year, and I think I can do it, okay? So anyhow, to me, that's still too squishy. When you talk to people, people don't like, how long am I doing this? And the other thing I'll tell you is, you know, the nation's unemployment rate's estimated to be approximately 10%. To me, what's amazing is that 90% of the people in this country are still employed. And, I mean, all you got to do is drive around in your car. I mean, you go someplace and you drive by malls and there's nobody in the parking lot. There's just nobody. There's nobody on the streets. So all the things that make the country go have come to a screeching halt. And again, the question is, how long can we do that? How long can we do that? And so I wish I would see some kind of, you know, for instance, we talk about conditions-based relief in place or a conditions-based movement towards something in the military. To me, those conditions ought to be published so that the American people understand. Okay, we need to get this 15 or this 5-minute test has to be in available in abundance, okay? And then that has to be disseminated. So that's one piece of this. And then, but know this, there's not a test out there that you're going to request on demand. We don't have 330 million tests. So that ain't happening. Okay? That ain't happening. Now, I would say there's labs around the country that are working on something to identify an antibody, to identify the virus that you can do easily at home so they can make a ton of money off. I believe that's going on right now all over the country. And people are spending a lot of money to do that because whoever does that is going to make a ton of money. The beauty of capitalism. But what are the things that need to be in place? And then you're going to go back to work, right? We're going to go shopping and we're going to social distance and the clerks are going to be masked up. The place where you check out is going to be plexiglassed in. You're going to swab down, there's going to be sanitizers next to the keypad. And so when you walk up to it, you're going to grab one of those little sanitizer things. You're going to swab it off and then you're going to punch and that clerk's not going to do anything for you. The bags are going to be out there. They're not going to put your stuff in a bag. You're going to put your stuff in a bag. So, I mean, life's going to change, but I wish that, you know, at one of those daily briefings that somebody would articulate that so people can understand. So anyway, but this is dedicated to all the people that have lost somebody and who can't gather to mourn them and just have to kind of deal with it through virtual memorial services and things like that. So hang in there.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Finally, we get to the weather today. Quantico, 5 weather alerts. Holy smokes, weather on the East Coast. Raining right now in 68 degrees. 6 weather alerts. A tornado watch, in effect. A storm warning. A winter weather advisory. A small craft advisory. And a local pollen alert. So, Northern Virginia tornado watch. Down the coast at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune, they have 3, which means you got to check it out. And that 3 is turned into 4 as I click on it. They have a tornado watch going on, a gale warning, a wind advisory, and a local pollen alert. It is 67 degrees under cloudy skies there. 29 palms is 63 degrees, so a lot warmer, almost 20 degrees warmer in 29 palms than it was late last week under sunny skies. So pretty typical this time of year. Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, cloudy in 58. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy in 69. Okinawa, cool. Dark cloudy and 61 degrees. In Lashkar Gah in Afghanistan, in the Helmand province, it is sun's falling, clouds in 74, and in Ramadi, it is clear evening and 74. In some shithole weather stuff. From Massachusetts, Chris Cox is headed to the coast. It's ramping up to tropical storm conditions. Wind and driven rain. Looking for a high of 57 today. Winds out of the south at 16 to 22 with gusts up to 35. Much higher near the coast where it will blow 60 miles an hour plus. Take your foul weather gear. Let's see. From East Grand Forks, Minnesota, where Ruthann got her cookbook. Yeah. Ruthann got her cookbook from the chef on Saturday. He went out on his balcony, and I don't know if he threw it down to her, but he might have. Still under a flood warning, but the river crested. The Red River of the North crested on Friday, which is always good news. 22 degrees, feels like 8, both above zero, under cloudy skies, snow flurries with big, huge snowflakes. And winds out at 17 out of the northwest. Looking for a high today of 28 degrees. Cloudy day in front of us. Winds will be at 22, gusting to 32 with snow likely. The looking for a low of 14 degrees overnight. The I already sent shithole weather report. But it's snowing now like a mother, and it's not light flurries. It's hard to tell, but the flakes are huge. Mother Nature is such a bitch. And here's a picture of her street with snow flurries. A lot of the snow's gone. You can see grass, but it's now mostly covered. So a sign of spring. And this is what happens in the upper Midwest. And in the Midwest, it'll drop down back below zero and rain, so you get snow everywhere before it decides to be summer. So that going on. And then somebody I've never, Jeffrey, yeah, rain again in Acushnet, and gives me the Latin lawn. Like, what the hell am I going to do with that? I'll have to put it in my Google Earth currently. Well, hold on, let me do it now. Took enough time to send in the weather. EMA volunteer. What's EMA? Emergency management? Is that what that is? All right, we're going to find out if he sent me a good lat long. I would imagine he did. But it's up to my Google Earth to judge whether he did or not. And it's going nowhere. So we'll take the name of the city and we'll see where this place is. It's in Massachusetts. We're in Massachusetts. Oh, it's right on the coast. Acushnet. It would be, where the hell is this? What city is it? I can't tell. Let's see, where is it? Relative to, there's Rhode Island. So relative to, you know, Massachusetts and Boston, if you go due south of Massachusetts, from Boston, okay, and you have Rhode Island down there, it's not too far from Rhode Island. It doesn't give me the name of the city, which is making me mad. Did I shut off the name of cities here? I might have. Places, ocean, weather. When I was doing Vietnam, I shut some stuff off. Roads. I should turn that on. Places. See, you can turn all this stuff off and on if you don't know this. If you mess around with your Google stuff. Yeah. So I'm looking. I should know the name of the city, but I don't. Anyway, so yeah, currently 53 degrees with a high of 56. High wind warning from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. with winds gusting up to 65 miles an hour, as Chris Cox said. Expecting 1.5 inches of rain. Concerns for power outages, but more concern for field hospitals dealing with COVID-19. Respectfully submitted. Love that. What's up, Jeff? Anyway, so Jeff lives in Massachusetts, right on the coast. And now giving Chris Cox a little competition for shithole weather. That's right. That's right. In Massachusetts. All right. We're not going to take a break. I'll do the top five stories in Early Bird, and then Woody's going to join us. So I kind of waxed long and hopefully moderately eloquent. I have to tell you this. I think that Nation is I don't know if the Nation's being served by watching the events in New York City, because the Nation is not like New York City. And we've got to get beyond that. We've got to get to a point where this is the path. This is the criteria, and governors are going to have to work with mayors, right, and county supervisors to open up their states. They're not going to be one rule for everybody in this country. And if I was a governor of a state that was lightly affected, I would be looking and saying, hey, look, the state is being forced to assume more debt. I've got to do the responsible thing. And this is an overreaction in 90% of the counties in my state. Right. So anyway, top five stories in Early Bird today. Stand by. I'm not sure why it's taking so long. Number one, Pentagon will not increase coronavirus testing despite evidence of personnel with no symptoms. So this is a controversy all over the country, right? People are carriers asymptomatically. And so, you know, our reaction is, well, we need to test everybody. Well, that ain't happening. We don't have that technology doesn't exist yet in those kind of numbers. So anyway, number two, almost 600 sailors on the carrier Roosevelt has tested positive for COVID-19. One passed away earlier today. Number three, the VA reports its 200th death from coronavirus. I would think the VA would be a source of huge numbers, and here's why. One, the reason you go to the VA is because you don't have any other form of health care. And so normally you're there because you're not doing well financially, and Yeah, you know, it's a provider of last resort. So I would think that their numbers would be high. Number four, Green Berets training pipeline continues despite COVID-19 concerns. You know, I'll tell you, the military is going to have to figure this out. And the answer is not, we're not going to take anybody. The answer is, we're going to learn how to do this. You're going to come. For new people, we're going to put you in quarantine for 2 weeks. And then you're going to be quarantined for, you know, the duration of this training, up to 3 months, however long it is for a Green Beret. Yeah, that's how this is going to work. Because it's not an option to shut it down. Not an option. So, number five, want your coronavirus relief payment? New online tools will help put that money in your bank account. Yeah. Everybody wants their share of it, right? And you'd be stupid not to get your share. So, yeah, there's all kinds of articles to it. Ruthann said the chef did toss it down from his balcony. So she's got her cookbook. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Chris Woodbridge will join us. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it on a Monday. Tomorrow, Grant Newsham going to join us, and we'll talk about some of this China stuff. And then on Wednesday, I think you're going to hear from a member of Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, who was at Contien during Operation Buffalo. So any discussion of content ought to start with the experience of the Marines of Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, near the marketplace, which is how Operation Buffalo got started in a big way. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.